talk to that individual who runs that specific program or has that expertise, and we then can ask.
Quietly down at the path. A firefly flew in his room and flew right out again. Down jumped the prince, and he went again to find his radio.
Allô, c'est Vieux Farka Touré, vous écoutez WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Toy hoy! Art hoy!
Come to see the shepherds play at Presbyterian Church on the corner of 1 and 4th Street in Hudson on Friday, December 20th at 7 o'clock and Saturday, December 21st at 4 o'clock.
The Oberwerfer Shepherd's Play was performed hundreds of years ago in a
Hello, this is Cleo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
It is a nativity play told largely from the point of view of three bumbling shepherds who are visited by the Archangel Gabriel. They make their way to Bethlehem in search of the newborn Jesus child. Tradition had it that a group of ordinary citizens would come together each year at Christmas time to perform this play for the town. This year, the Camp Hudson community has come together to put on this play for their friends and neighbors in the city of Hudson. Come and see the Shepherd's Play at the Presbyterian Church, 360 Warren Street, in Hudson on Friday, December 20th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, December 21st at 4 p.m.
Tune in to the WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hear Shepherd's Play of Gibber Hill Hudson on WGXC 90.7.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Judd Malton of Hillsdale, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you, at your service. 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
This is the Art of the Hudson Valley on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM on your radio dial locally and globally. It's WGXC.org, and our listeners are global. And this is the December podcast of the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'm your host, Chad Weckler, and today we have a lot of artists in the studio, but they all are participating in a exhibition here in Hudson, New York. The exhibition is at the gallery at 46 Greene Street, and this is a blue group exhibition of artists. And we have one, two, three, four of the artists, plus the rabble group gatherer, Tom McGill, who keeps these shows going at the gallery at 46 Greene Street. And we have the four artists, Mary Brenneman, Nancy Knupp, Amanda Taylor, and Christy Sangster. So we're going to go for introductions. to my left, please.
I'm Christy Sangster. I was born in New York State, but I grew up in Eastern Canada.
Hi, my name is Nancy, and I hail from the 800 block in Hudson, New York.
My name is Amanda Taylor. I grew up in Manhattan and moved up to the Hudson River Valley a few years ago.
I'm Mary Brenneman, and I'm a lot older than the rest of the group. And I've lived in many places, but the last place was Mexico. And I live in Claverack right now.
Tom?
Oh, I'm Tom Miguel. I was born in Jamaica, Queens. I grew up in New Jersey, and I've been up here in Hudson for about 6.5, well, it'll be actually 7 years on Winter Walk.
And Tom, how did this show come about?
Well, we have been doing solo shows for the last 2 or so years. And when we started out at Green Street, we were doing a lot of group shows based on theme. And we decided that it was time to do a group show again. And we just thought that blue would be a great theme, in part because it has so many different ways to interpret it. And we wanted to invite artists. All the artists, the 17 artists who are in the show, are artists that we either know, Dave Schwing, Chris Baguda, and I either know personally or found through social media. And what organizes them is that they're either local or in the New York region, and that they are new to us.
And it just so happens that the opening reception is Saturday, December 7th, and it's going to run through February 2nd of 2020. So that's fabulous. Two months, Tom. That's fabulous.
We wanted to give people a chance to come see the show. Yep. The holidays are a tough time, and we figured if we lasted through January that once people got their equilibrium back, they could come to see the show.
So there is an opening reception December 7th at the gallery from 5 to 7 p.m. It's 46 Green Street. That's green as in color and blue as in show. So let's join our artists. And Mary, I'm going to start with you. Oh, yeah, I'm starting with you since you're the wisest of us all. So... Mary, talk to our audience about the type of art that you do.
Oh, let's see. I would say that I am a representational painter. I think I interpret what I'm painting, but I would say that I'm a representational painter, basically.
I'm going to ask you this, more of a meaning of representation?
Well, I work from the world around me. I paint the world around me. So I've been a portraitist. I've been a landscape painter. I'm now painting clothing. As a matter of fact, because of this show, I was invited to the show, and we were given about 2 weeks to come up with something blue, and I had nothing blue. And so I had on a blue shirt. So I decided to take the shirt off and paint it.
Oh.
And so now I'm painting all my wardrobe and having a wonderful time.
That I think is a something that artists do, is they like to come up with inventive ideas. And we all as artists need to expand and investigate things that we haven't done before. Is painting clothing something new?
Yes, I've never painted clothing before.
All right, I love that. Next, we have...
Amanda Taylor.
All right, Amanda. Where again, you're the 800 block? 800?
No, that's no. Nancy.
Nancy.
She's the 800 block. I live down in Germantown, actually, or Claremont, more properly. My mailing address is Germantown, but I vote in Claremont, so...
I know, it's very confusing around here with all these towns because it's not just a little spot on the map. It kind of meanders in and around our rural area.
Yeah. I live in a very rural area, nothing like Hudson. I can't walk to anything except my neighbor's house. But.
And what's your art?
My work in the show is four prints that I hand-colored. I painted with gouache. I guess I think of myself primarily as a printmaker, though sadly my press has been in storage for a few years now, and I'm laboring mightily to get it back up and running. I have a studio space that I'm working on, and as soon as that's going, I'll have a full print shop. Mm. But I certainly have drawers and drawers of prints lying around right now. I also draw and I paint and I make sort of sculptural objects and things that I call books that other people might not identify as books, but they have a kind of sequential process involved in them that is book-like to me.
And in the exhibition that we're going to see at Blue, what are you showing?
They're four prints, and they're representational also. Like Mary, I think of myself as a representational artist, although I don't paint portraits. I never have. These are four heads, faces that are drawn from my mind, not from actual people, but from memories of people.
When did you start becoming an artist?
Well, I took my first printmaking class in sixth grade. I was really lucky. I went to an amazing school in Manhattan that had a fully equipped print shop. And I just totally fell in love with the process right then and there. It, you know, turned my hands black with ink, and I thought it was super punk rock, and that was who I wanted to be. So I started making prints when I was in sixth grade, and basically didn't stop. When I went to college, I found an incredible printmaking teacher and studied with him every semester that I was at school, even though I wasn't even an art major. I was a architecture major, but printmaking's always been sort of the through line of everything for me.
Well, we're going to go to Nancy now that we know she's a Hudsonite,
yes.
A Hudsonian. Were you born in Hudson?
No. I moved here a couple years ago. Yeah.
Where from?
The city. Yes.
New York City?
Yes, I went to college there.
Cool. And what type of artist are you?
The pieces that I have in the show are paintings, and that's kind of new for me. I am a sewer by trade. I guess that trade is not, I mean, just... Well, that's what I know how to do.
Yeah.
So for this show, I just decided to think about backgrounds and foregrounds. And so I did just a blue abstract background and decided to think about polars and abstract and figurative and white and black. So I took the same shade of blue and I mixed it with black in one painting and with white in the other. That's it.
Christy, all right. It's your turn.
Okay.
Artist that you are.
I guess I mainly focus on jewelry and metalsmithing. That's what I studied in college. So I dabble in other things, but for the show, I'm sticking with what I know best. I would call it probably more wearable art, just because it's not what you envision when you think of jewelry, right, for this show anyway. I interpreted the blue topic as blue language or profanity. So my pieces deal with primarily women and their relationship with profanity.
That was actually going to be a question I had for you, Tom. I think as artists, we do want to sort of open it up. And Christy, I like the blue language. Tom, did anyone come in with sort of a emotional blue?
Yes. Yes. Well, I think most of the work has blue, the color in it, but a significant portion of the work also explores mood. So there's mood, there's language, there's color, and also there's gender. You know, Bob Bacigalupi put together our artist statement, and he was exploring all the different, in preparation for the statement, he investigated all the different meanings of blue and what you could do with it. And he found such a wide variety of stuff that we intuited, which is why we chose the subject. But it was kind of curious to find through his investigation that in terms of gender, blue is relatively a recent color for male. That in, I think in Victorian times, it was actually swapped. Blue was basically the color that babies are identified with, and pink for male. So in terms of blue as being a thing that is, it has meaning on its own, that's sort of a false notion that we carry away. It's like it's all applied meaning. And it was kind of curious to see how each of the artists applied meaning in exploring that subject, just the word blue.
Now, did all four of you kind of have that in your brains when you were thinking about the type of art that you wanted to present to the gallery? Because I would imagine, were you asked to submit a larger selection that could be weaned down, or did you say, here are my three pieces, and or here are my 38 pieces, good luck editing them down? I mean, what was all your personal experiences? Mary, what was your...
Well, I can be a prolific painter, I have to say. So within 2 weeks, I painted six paintings, and I submitted six.
Well, you snap right to it, don't you?
And then, yes, I do. And they ended up taking four shirts that I used the color blue. I don't think I got into too much of a conceptual idea. I just simply got into these shirts and worked color blue in all of the shirts. So that's what I did.
Well, Tom came, and I was a little bit late turning in the work for the show, and he asked me how big my piece was going to be because he had already started the process of installing it. And I happened to be holding a pretty large sheet of paper at the time. I said, oh, it's this big. And he blanched. He looked horrified. So I went home. I had done a drawing in blue ink on a very large sheet of paper, but I decided to take pity on him. And I
good for you.
I reworked these prints that I have, and I gave him four. I don't know how many of them are actually in the show, but
they're all in the show.
Oh, nice! Yeah.
Oh, wow!
Thanks, Tom. But I thought it would give him a little more flexibility if I gave him four smaller things instead of the one big thing.
And they were great because they relate to each other, so we can install them in relationship to each other. So it's actually bigger than the piece that you would have submitted,
right?
Yeah. But it actually fit in the overall installation a lot better than the piece, not even seeing the piece, but just in terms of like the dimensions of what you're going to share.
Mm-hmm.
These four pieces actually work really well.
Cool. Well, I'm happy to help. And thank you for that very honest expression on your face so that I knew that I was about to really throw a wrench into the works.
And Amanda, where have you exhibited before other than Green Street?
Well, I've actually exhibited a lot of places. I have work in the permanent collection of the New York Public Library. That's my proudest accomplishment as a book person and a native New Yorker. I was part of a bookmakers collective in, I don't know, 10 years ago. They were very proactive about taking work around and selling it. So they sold a piece of mine to the public library. I have a piece at Harvard at the Fogg Art Museum. I have one somewhere else in one of those museums in Los Angeles. I just wrote it down and I'm totally blanking because I never go to Los Angeles. But yeah, I have a book out in some museum in LA.
That's great.
Yeah. And I've had shows in the city, and I had a piece that was traveling around for years in a big book show that went to a bunch of universities.
And Nancy, when did you get started creating art?
In general or for the show?
In general.
In general?
Yeah, in the large scope.
I destroyed one of my mother's antique wingback chairs one time when I was seven. That might have been the advent of it. But yeah, like I said, I started sewing when I was seven. So the purpose of fine art painting, it kind of came as a frustration that I actually couldn't sew when I first moved to the city. And, you know, I kind of had to figure out how to keep my hands busy, and I wasn't in a fine art major. So I was kind of bopped around. I did a little bit of etching. I did a little bit of jewelry making. I did a little bit of just drawing and painting. And I settled on something all in the middle of that, I guess. So that's kind of like my trajectory. I'm not a trained fine artist.
Well, do you have to be?
No, not at all. No, not at all. I'm a big proponent of, you know, if you do it and you love it, then you want to show it, then it's art. I'm a big fan of that idea.
Me too. I think that's a perfect explanation.
Yeah.
So do you like working with your hands then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you have sculpting that you've done?
No.
No.
That's a studio mess that I haven't actually created yet. But you know, stay tuned.
Yeah, you're still young. Do you like to make a mess, or do you like to be finite and
no?
Perfect?
I really love to make a mess, and I really appreciated Amanda's comment about finding printmaking. For me was a similar experience. I started making my own paints because the pigments I realized could be mixed with really cheap pre-bought mediums. And so instead of using the ink that they had in the school, which you had to pay a fee for, and I wasn't a print major, so I actually technically wasn't even allowed in the lab. I never signed in for the open. Oh my gosh, this is on the radio, right? But I never actually signed in to my college print lab. I was friendly with the technician there. And so I started messing around with pigments, much to the horror of my fellow print people, because if there's anything wet in the vicinity, you're going to pick this pigment up. And so I'm over there with like Prussian powder and glitter and like black pigments. And so I was able to kind of experiment, and that was kind of what I love to do, what I love to make messes out of.
So are we going to hear from Christy that you also started at age 7? Because it seems to be a common age.
I mean, you know, then you've got like your writing down. It's a good time to get them out of the house, right?
I think so. I think my parents sent me to the Confederation Center of Arts in Prince Edward Island, which is more famously known for its Anne of Green Gables play. And that's where I first started experimenting and making really terrible clay jewelry for my mother for Mother's Day, I think. That was my first indulgence into the jewelry world anyway.
Have all of you experienced art in school? Was that something that came first, or did it come from home? Christy, I'll continue with you.
Well, I mean, I guess I had the desire to go to the Confederation Center, so my mother sent me there. And I kind of dabbled on my own. I did an English degree and moved to South Korea to teach English for a while and came back and wasn't quite sure what to do with myself, so I applied to art school. And then I began to take it a lot more seriously when I was accepted to NASCAT. And then I tried every medium that I was able to try. So
good. And Amanda, for you, was it same experience? Was it school or home that you sort of got things started?
There was a lot of art in my home growing up. My mother had studied art history in college and worked at a gallery, and she actually worked at the Smithsonian when she was right out of college, quite young. And so there was definitely a lot of interest in art floating around the house, but not really in making it. I grew up in Manhattan, so we were blocks from the Metropolitan Museum. I used to go to the Met all the time after school. I'd just walk in with my friends, and instead of hanging out on a street corner, we'd hang out, you know, in some random Egyptian art gallery, and, you know, that's where we did our gossiping. And
But I think my parents were still a bit taken aback when I said I wanted to be an artist, not an art historian, not a collector or curator or something that they did kind of try to discourage it. But
you won through in your stubbornness.
Well, yeah, of course.
Being a Manhattanite, you know, that's where you get stubborn and want to make things happen, hopefully.
Yeah, you got to put your head down. And I'd also say when I was young, the East Village art scene was a huge, huge, big deal. And I was a dumb teenager going out to nightclubs, and Andy Warhol would be there hanging out with Jean-Michel Basquiat, and people would be drifting through, you know, restaurants that I ate at downtown. And in a weird way, the contemporary artists in New York were the celebrities for me. I mean, I wasn't deeply enamored of, you know, random film stars. I would get like really excited because I was in a restaurant and Bryce Marden, who's an amazing contemporary artist, would like walk in. He actually now lives up here in Tivoli by chance, but you know, be like, oh my God, there's Bryce Marden. And we just saw his show at you know, wherever, at the Whitney or something. And
now it's, oh my gosh, there's Amanda Taylor. Oh my gosh.
Not quite yet.
No, not yet.
Fingers crossed. Let's see. I think Blue's going to push me over the edge, right, Tom?
That's the hope.
Yeah.
Like for all the artists that, actually one of the reasons why we invited the artists that we did was that we wanted to have a nice mix of people who have are in different stages of their art career. Like so there are people who have exhibited a lot and have had a longer working career, and there are some artists who are just getting started. And like one of the mission statements of one of the missions of us is to create a context within which local artists can be supported and celebrated and interact and connect. So one of the things I'm really happy about is that it's an opportunity for artists to get together either at the opening or during the course of the run and to create connections and to network and to create help co-create a creative community in the local area.
Yeah, I would say from my experience for certainly in Hudson, there are a lot of galleries, and I would say gallery curators, gallery owners are sort of the impetus of direction and sort of the longevity of the art that is exhibited. And you can correct me, Tom, but I think of your gallery as one that is open. Open to experiment, open to local artists, which is very rare. You know, to have a local gallery show local artists is not common. And so would you say outsider would be a description, or how would you describe the gallery at Green Street?
Well, before I came up here, I was in Frenchtown, New Jersey, and there was a gallery there called the Outsider Gallery. And it was the first gallery I showed in. I don't really consider myself an outsider artist, although part of that definition includes, self-trained or, you know, not art school trained, which I'm not, so I guess I fit that mold. But there's a wide variety of types of art that comes from that title. I don't see mine as being that. But that being said, the gallery, I think we consider ourselves a gallery that is learning by doing. None of us are trained as gallerists. We're not trained as curators. We all each have different experience of art in galleries and museums. And we bring that to the table. And I bring my experience as an artist who's exhibited. Dave and Bob were both involved with Broadway, so they bring that aesthetic. So I think a lot of times our openings are intentionally not traditional. Like the lighting might be a little off, or the music might be a little off, with the goal of creating an event that brings people to the gallery, that brings people to art. I think we're doing things a little bit differently than a lot of galleries in town. And the galleries in town are great. And I love the work they're curating, but we are by intention not doing that, because it's already being done here. So we want to be part of a an unconnected gallery collective that are doing things that are all a little bit different.
Yeah, I think everybody in this room is a little bit different. I was going to say a little bit off, but that fits in. And Mary, I wanted to get back to you because you're painting clothing, and I want to ask you, is it wearable or is it exhibitable?
Well, it's she's painting portraits of clothes.
That's a good description, Tom. I think I'm painting portraits of clothes. I'm trying to create little environments now. I'm trying to create, let's see, what's the word? Maybe a scenario. I don't know. I have a lot of ideas. I've only completed the ones in the show and then maybe three other pieces. So I'm only beginning on this project.
A question that popped up in my head is, I'm a photographer, but I've also done painting and sculpture. And for photography, that has the potential to have longevity. But not all art is meant to be living forever. Some people create art that disintegrates and disappears quickly. But for the four of you, are you looking for your art to continue into multiple generations after you've created it? Since Nancy's saying her head up and down, yes.
Yes, absolutely. I am. I'm also an archivist. I think it's very important. I mean, we unfortunately in the art world, we want to preserve everything because it has a monetary value. But I think it's very important for each artist to create a body of work that stays with them. And there are certain things that I know that I've made that nobody else can hold or exhibit or sell that will enhance their value to me. So in terms of, you know, keeping things for other next generations, also as a quilter and a sewing person, I have objects that were given to me. And I find them very aesthetically and artistically valuable, but I wouldn't see how that value would translate to a gallery wall. But that aside, yes, I generally think that it's very important for artists to keep their own little archive of work to see. To tell themselves, you know, where they've come from.
And Christy, when it comes to jewelry, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Antiques Roadshow, and often there's something, there's all sorts of art, and jewelry is one of those things that when something's well made, hopefully, and there's a story often attached to it and who made it, and even when something doesn't identify with a maker, the art, the piece, continues. What's your experience with that?
Well, the pieces that I did for this show specifically are different than what I usually do. There's a lot more found objects used, components that I don't normally work with, and even some, I experimented with resin, which I hadn't used before, mainly because of the two-week time constraint. I didn't have a lot of time to cast anything and have it all ready. But it was actually quite fun because it forced me to do something that I don't normally do. As far as longevity goes, I guess it would depend on the wearer and how they treated the piece of jewelry. I mean, if you treat it preciously, then it will last for generations. However, you know, everybody's lost an earring or misplaced a ring, so it kind of depends on the wearer's experience.
Yeah, I often think when a earring is missing, there's certainly nothing wrong with putting something else on your other ear. Does anybody ever come back and say, oh, Christy, I'm so sorry, I lost that one pair. Can you make something to go with it, or should it, in that case, should it duplicate, or do you actually want to do something a little different that mixes in?
Because I don't use molds, it would never be exactly the same.
I like that.
Okay.
I like that. And is it always wearable?
No, actually, one of the pieces in the show is more of a baby teething ring, so that's technically not wearable. But it went with the theme and my blue language, and I know that sounds really odd to say blue language and baby teether together, but...
it's working in this circumstance.
Yes.
and Amanda, when... I'm just, you know, having conversation here, and I think of longevity and your work, and, you know, also speaking to the four of you, and chime in, is it important to sign your work? Is it important to have your name up front? Do you have it in the background where it could eventually be found? Doesn't always include a name, might be a symbol. I mean, how did the four of you sort of fit into how you identify yourself in your work? Mandy, yeah, you go first.
Well, in printmaking, there's a protocol. There's a form. You make a print, and you designate on the left-hand side what number in the series it is, and if it's not part of a series, you just write AP for artist's proof. And then on the right-hand side, under the where the plate is, you sign it. And I think certainly there are prints in the world that, you know, are sold that are unsigned, but they don't really count. In a strict sense, they're not considered part of the work of the artist until they are signed. So, like, you know, when an artist dies, you could take a plate and print it and print it and print it, but those aren't considered the artist's work because they were created after the artist left and they're unsigned. I'm not much of a stickler either way. I don't care. You couldn't read my signature anyway on my prints. But I do, as a matter of course, sign things because that's just how I was taught to do it. And I have drawers full of stuff that isn't signed, and occasionally I, you know, like rip it up and use it for spreading ink or you don't sign everything because everything isn't worth signing, but
that's a good,
once you get it to a certain place from a printmaking point of view, that's, but it isn't about having my name being seen, it's just about identifying the work properly in the conventional manner.
And Mary, being the sage that you are in creating...
Come on.
has your work progressed and changed over time?
I've gone through a 5 or 6 year drought, if you want to know the truth.
Oh, well.
I lived in Mexico for quite a long time and enjoyed my work, you know, and... But I moved here, and the move was a major adjustment in terms of my work. And so it's only been probably in the past few months that I feel like I've gotten my mojo back. I've consistently worked, but I feel like I've been in the desert, if you want to know the truth. So anyway, I think the show has helped me, actually, because I'm loving painting clothing. So... That's it. It's been a gift.
Well, we'll thank Tom for that.
Well, I do thank Tom.
And Nancy, for you, I mean, let's say you're the youngest of the group here. When you think about where you are now and moving forward, do you see yourself changing on purpose or by accident?
I hope it's on purpose. Yes, I really hope it's on purpose. I'm going through a not such a happy period in my life right now. And so I'm trying to give myself I'm trying to give myself an outlet to see myself in a better light. And the opportunity to make art definitely helps with that. And so, yes, I think it's a, we all are works in progress, and we're all trying to notch up, and none of that work is done until, you know, So
until you know.
No, until you know.
So. Until it's done. Yeah.
Do all of you write? Do you keep diaries or do you jot ideas down in books? How do you, because often, I'll speak for myself, I have an idea and I know if I don't write it down, it's going to be lost in a day, even a day, a dream, come up some this weird idea if I don't write it down. Or maybe in your case, you paint it. You actually make a work of art. But I always think that I'm going to be forever doing different things. And so I want to go back and think about, I've never done this. Maybe it's time to try it. But do you also feel that you need to make a living from your art? So you have to create something that becomes valuable. At least it pays your rent. Anybody want to talk about that? Mary.
I'll talk about it.
Good.
Right now, I'm not painting to make a living, even though I do need to make a living.
Mm.
And I work part-time in a shop. I think I've become a little spoiled. I lived in Mexico, and I had a gallery there. And I made a living.
Mm.
I happened to be there at a perfect time. Where it was becoming a lot of people were moving there from California and Texas and building big haciendas and needing paintings. And Mexico was the most inspiring country in the world for painting the world around you. The color and the culture and the vibrancy, all of it just turned me on enormously. And I loved the landscape. I loved everything about it. So, I was there at the right time. So since I've come here, I've sold a little bit at a friend's antique store, but not enough to. But you know what? I don't think too much about money. I just paint.
So, Mary, you have a website?
It's not very up to date.
Well, that's probably
but
not
I have,
uncommon.
I'm on Instagram and Facebook. So
Mary's Instagram feed is great.
Yeah,
she's posting both new work and old work. And if you look at her Instagram, you'll see how even though that she's painting clothes without people in them, she's been painting clothes for a long time.
Mm.
Like a lot of those paintings that you're posting from Mexico are people who are clothed. Hmm. So there's a really interesting connection between what she's doing now and what she did then, even though they're very different. But just exploring clothes and having them have, she's presenting them in a way they have an emotional reaction to them. And that's hard to do in an inanimate object. So, and when she shared those with us, we were kind of blown away. They were like really amazing. So I would say check out her Instagram account to see how her work has evolved as you're posting new and old stuff, but also the new stuff she's posting now is really great.
Thank you, Tom, very much.
All right, Tom, you're going to stick to the microphone because I'm going to continue around the room, and I want you to talk about each of the other three remaining artists. And Amanda, you're next. So, Tom, I want you to talk about Amanda.
Be gentle with me, Tom.
Okay. I've known Amanda for a long time, and I knew that she was an artist and that she had done printmaking. But because of what she was talking about and not having her print studio set up, I hadn't really had the chance to see much of her work. But I've done some work for her, and I've seen stuff. And she had a really amazing piece in a protest show that was at TSL this last fall. And it was sculptural. It was print. It was on point to the subject of the show. So it was a really powerful piece. So we were all really excited to invite her to participate.
Amanda, how do you present your work to the world?
I almost never do. Right now, I moved up here a few years ago, well, more than a few years ago now, like 6 or 7, and I have a small child and several different jobs, and most of my work just sits on my table at home or is in drawers or, kind of pull things out late at night if I have the energy and tinker. And the piece that Tom is talking about, though, I found in a box. I was unpacking boxes from my studio in Brooklyn that had been packed for a while since I moved up here. And I opened up this box, and at the bottom of it, I found this piece, which I actually, it's sculptural, but it's one of those ones I would describe, I would call it a book. It has text, and it works a certain way. And I was shocked by it. I hadn't seen it in ages. Hmm. Even myself, nobody had seen it. It had been in a box. And I had a real moment of like revelation, like remembering making this object. And it kind of goes back to what Nancy was saying, like making things to remind yourself of who you are and why you're here. I just, this thing, I all of a sudden I looked at it, and I remembered the intention behind it, these ideas I had had, the processes that I had to go through to make it. It has a lot of very fussiness to it. It took me a long time, and there were a couple little techniques I had to invent to make it work. And it was like this placeholder for a moment in my artistic life and my personal life. And I was so happy to see it again. Mm. And then I actually wrote a very long Instagram post about that experience of finding that book.
Ari, just mentioned Instagram.
Yes.
So where do we find you on Instagram?
Well, my full name is Amanda Park Taylor, and that's my Instagram handle. But sadly, I guess, I should start one for art purposes, because my current Instagram account is all pictures of my 8-year-old and my 3 dogs and my various construction projects. So
that's okay. Those are all works in progress.
You'd have to scour the feed to find the art. There's a little bit of art in there, but... yeah, I'm Amanda Park Taylor.
Yes, you are.
At Instagram.com. No, not really.
And Nancy, where do we find you in the world?
On Instagram.
Yeah?
Yeah. And my handle is Ladybug1018.
Why?
Well, my birthday is 1018, October the 18th, for people who... having a hard time. And then, sorry, I don't know why I said that. And then Ladybug, I've always enjoyed ladybugs, and it was my first tattoo. Yeah, nothing too exciting.
Well, I think it does sound exciting, so people will be drawn to it. And Christy, where can we find your work?
I would say also Instagram. It's under Second Thoughts, but second with a 2 N-D.
Okay.
And basically, because some of what I do, you were talking about art versus financial, some of what I do is a little bit less experimental and more sellable, and it's reworking of vintage pieces, so hence the Second Thoughts.
Collage?
I guess you could call it jewelry collage. I mean, I'm mixing vintage pieces with new chains and new materials. So, yeah.
Tom, I keep thinking, you know, you have all these wonderful artists and these great shows. You should put together an art glossary of, I mean, I've heard a lot of, not art speak here, but, you know, work disciplines, multimedia, ceramics. I mean, and then you could have it as sort of a fill in the box for every artist that could fill in.
I think the artist would appreciate that. Speaking from the point of view of an artist, putting together a statement is the least favorite thing to do.
Yeah, least fun, that's for sure.
And if we could have an artist statement generator where you could fill in boxes, that would be great. If I was a programmer, I would program that.
You could do it like Mad Libs.
It could be like Mad Libs, yes.
Just a straight, or those old letters that you used to send from camp. Dear Mom and Dad, I am having a, you know, check the box. Yeah. Mm. Great, good, bad time.
Ooh, that could be a show, too.
Mm. It could be. It's a curious thought, though. I just watched about a week or so ago the movie in TSL about... Audrey Flack, and she sort of pushed back against the notion that the category that she's put in is the category which she finds herself in as an artist. I remember seeing the movie about Ann Martin, and she likewise did not consider herself what they considered her. And it's kind of curious, like the labels that are imposed upon us or that we impose upon ourselves and how they either drive or restrain us from doing our work. So like the notion that, like I think you asked Nancy the question, do you see your work evolving and moving? Yeah. I mean, we're human beings and we're affected by the process. We're affected by our lives and the people around us and get bored of doing the same thing oftentimes. And so if we get locked into a label, do we lock ourselves into the label? Do we see ourselves making, if we have to make a living or make a name, producing the same things over and over again because that's how we're known? Or can we feel free to like escape that?
Yeah, I did see a recent interview with Laurie Anderson where she described herself as a media artist. And she's done a lot of different work, but I also identify with being a media artist. And when people ask, I mean, I went from photographer, which, you know, maybe said my professional life, I started to realize, well, no, I'm an artist. And I think that's generally a good description. But then after you say I'm an artist, then they say, what kind of artist? And then we get into more nuance. But that's what people want. They want to be able to continue to label you, but I think, and everybody could say something differently, but they need to put into their mind like a filing cabinet often to say, next time I want to see some glass art or fiber art or photography or painting or whatever, that person who I just met, I'll put them in that little category in my head. But as someone who curates and has a gallery and also you're an artist, what are your feelings about that?
Well, the challenge on the gallery side is one of the goals is to sell art.
Thank goodness, yeah.
And I came to that realization much later. And like I just want people to see art that I love and connect with the artists who are making the art. But part of our role is to facilitate those sales for the artists. And so we have to create a narrative that makes the art, doesn't make the art, but allows the art to be accessible. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you create a really tight boundary, I like to create a really open boundary, but still like enough where people can come in and see that piece for what it is. And sometimes it's just, I need to have an artist statement. Sometimes I need to have the artist there. Sometimes I need to be able to talk to the artist so that I can tell their story through my experience of both them and their art. But I, outside of that, when I make things, I'm making things so I'm driven to do it, either by politics, mental illness, boredom, whatever. And sometimes the process is the significant part of what results in the end piece. And so for me to label it, I don't feel it does justice to my process, but I often find times if it's a particularly challenging piece that's really open-ended, a viewer will come in and they kind of want context. And so the challenge for me is to create context without creating a definition, like allowing the person to see it and define it for themselves, as opposed to me saying, I had an experience in an early show, did a figurative piece with two figures and two women who were friends looked at it, and the first woman said to me, oh, I love this piece. The color, the composition is really great. I said, oh, thank you. And so right when the opening event is closing and I'm packing up, her friend came up and asked me to explain the piece. And so I explained the narrative that I was trying to describe in my experience. And she said, oh, I don't like it then. Hmm. And what I realized is that I didn't create a context that would allow her to have an experience with it. She didn't like my experience. Mm. I didn't allow her to have her experience. Wow. And so the challenge is always to like give enough context where people can see it and then explore it.
Well, Tom, we got to two of the artists, and now I'm going to ask you to talk about Christie's work and how would you describe it?
Well, Christy is a 46 Green Street Studios tenant. So I've known Christy, and I knew you before you moved in your studio. And so Christy is the secret tenant. She's the one who sneaks in and sneaks out.
Wow.
She's in there working quietly, and then she leaves. And so I see some of the stuff you do on your Instagram account, but the first like piece that I really saw was the piece that you had submitted for the protest show. It was amazing. It was part collage, part jewelry, part installation. Really powerful piece. I mean, I don't wear jewelry. I appreciate it, but I don't. I know beautiful jewelry, but I don't know how to distinguish it. But the work that she has done for the show also is just amazing.
Would you call tattoos ink jewelry? I know you have tattoos.
I would not. I would not call them ink jewelry.
Okay. A wild thought that came in my head. Shame on me. So Nancy, how would you describe Nancy's work?
Well, Nancy does a really wide variety of things, and she shared over the course of time. Like, I think I probably met you when you first came up here, like shortly afterward. And she does really, like, one of the things that she shared with me that she does is really amazing is sort of like, I don't even know how to describe them. They're like, not zines, but they're like collage pages of experience. And then, like, the sewing stuff. And, like, she does such a wide variety of things that I was really... And really, like, amazing stuff. And I was really curious to see how she would take up the challenge of doing blue, because I don't know that I've seen you many of your paintings. So I was really kind of curious to see if you would do a painting or how would you take that up. So, like, her work is so varied. Like, there's not that many artists. Like, a lot of artists that I know do work, and you could tell that's that person's work. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of artists in the show who do work. And if you only knew one part of their work, you wouldn't see another part of their work and say, oh, that's that person. So to be able to explore different media in that way, I find really exciting.
Yeah, I would say, and Tom, thank you for doing that for our four artists here, because...
And thank you for putting me on the spot.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. And
better you than us.
we're gonna lose Amanda here because she's.
I have a day job, or a day into evening job, where I expect to see some of the people here later.
Will we see you at the opening Saturday?
I will be there. My day job will prevent me from coming right at the beginning, but I will be there at some point after 6 o'clock. Looking very much forward to it.
Great. Well, Amanda Taylor, thank you for joining us here on the podcast.
Thank you, Todd. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And thank all you guys. Yay.
All right.
Thanks, Amanda.
I would say, as an artist, when I read something like Tom just did, I am just amazed of that kind of talent, because I don't have that talent of talking about another artist's work. And when it's done by anybody, maybe... For every show that we're all in, let's have that gallery curator write a little blurb about us and then possibly use that in our artist statement. I think that would help us out because, yes, I agree, the artist statement is a very difficult thing, at least for me, to write. And it changes. I would imagine it changes for all of you depending on the work that you're doing and the exhibition you might be in. So, Tom, how would you describe what we're going to be seeing at the gallery for the next 2 months, from December 7th to February?
A wide variety of interpretations of blue. There are paintings. That being said, like there are paintings, there are sculptures, there are prints, there are collages, photographs. So the, you know, wide variety of media, artists coming from very different points in their career, different experiences of life. We were kind of blown away by the quality, and I don't mean that in terms of like good or bad. I mean, but the quality of what the artist took up in terms of exploring the concept. And I think that it turns out that they all work well together. I mean, it's helpful that my co-curators have a really good sense of how to relate